everyone. Welcome back to Southern Fried Storytime. I'm so excited to talk to you again. I know it's been a while. Last weekend, I spent the weekend with my younger brother in Florida, and I was so excited to see him. It's been a very, very long time, and I hope the rest of you got to spend some time over Easter break and spring break hanging out with your family members that you haven't seen in a while as well. It was truly a very, very fun experience, and from it, I brought home a couple of little stories from Florida to add to our collection. Now, as you drive through the tall, thick flora of the Everglades, one thought will almost certainly come to mind, and it's that almost anything could be out there. It's a sentiment that people have had about the mountains, the oceans, and any vast stretching space where the chaos of nature still seems to be king. With so much space and such thick, dense foliage, any number of creatures we have yet to discover could have made a home there, and we, on the outside, would be none the wiser. Such may be the case with the skunk ape, or swamp ape. While the creature has been seen, and especially smelled, over all of the southeastern United States, it is especially prominent in Florida, and most especially in the Everglades and in Sarasota. It is thought to be one of Bigfoot's many global cousins, including the Yeti, Sasquatch, Yowie, or the most aggressive of these ogre-style beasties, the Ohio Grassman. It is a bipedal primate figure, usually reported as being between 5 to 7 feet tall, making it a little smaller than your average Bigfoot cousin. Unlike the others, it also has a distinctly reddish-brown hue to its fur and is known for its very pungent odor. It is described as smelling like anything from a skunk to the smell of a skunk mixed with that of badly rotting meat. Thus its name, the skunk ape. I'm so glad that we don't name people based on how they smell. Grandmas would be cookies and old attic. Alcoholics would be named after their drink of choice, and people of Walmart would be named Greasy Hair B.O. and Subway Sandwich. I would probably be named 120-pound dog. I'm just saying it seems a little rude, and it's no wonder that the skunk ape is hiding from us. In 1818, local newspapers in Apalachicola, Florida, reported the sighting of a man-sized monkey raiding stores and stalking locals. The Seminole natives have stories describing a foul-smelling, extremely strong monster whose name translated as Furry Tall Man or Hairy Giant. They described the creature as secretive and shy, which follows the typical description of the skunk ape. Many people consider the skunk ape a hoax, which is common among Bigfoot-type creatures. Others think that it may be a misidentification of local wildlife, such as a bear with mange or an orangutan. The U.S. National Park Services also consider the skunk ape a hoax. There have been proposed links between the skunk ape and the Sarasota circus culture, stating that it may be the descendant of an escaped circus animal or performer, though I find this to be unlikely as the native legends predate the Florida being a winter refuge retreat for the circus by miles. The skunk ape has become something of a mascot for wildlife preservation, wild natural areas, and even rural culture in Florida. As I mentioned before, the Ohio Grassman is seen as the most aggressive of this type of cryptid. In contrast, the skunk ape is one of the least so. From the native legends to modern-day sightings, the creature is generally considered pretty shy. It prefers to hide away deep in the swamp and tends to flee as soon as it sees humans, which makes it very hard to film or catch. Part of why I've waited so long to do an episode on this particular cryptid is because it is so shy and hard to spot that there really isn't a lot to say about its behavior or its features, other than it is a story that exists. But I didn't want to dismiss it out of hand because, as you all know by now, I'm fascinated by stories that are so similar but come from very different parts of the globe, and the skunk ape fits neatly in with the other Bigfoot-type cryptids from all over the world that I personally classify as ogre-type creatures. Because nearly every culture has something similar to this creature, it tends to make me much more interested than if the skunk ape was its own unique entity. Still, because it is such a familiar creature type, it makes it a bit difficult for this creature to hold down a whole episode on his own, which brings me to our next segment. The Gulf of Mexico is home to the known wrecks of hundreds of ships. Experts say that hundreds more may be unknown due to incomplete records from early explorers. Some say the rapidly changing nature of the wind and tides are the reason why, but others say there's something else to blame. We've all heard it said that we know more about what's in outer space than we do about what's in our own oceans. And for those in Pensacola, Florida, and the surrounding areas, this is an especially strong sentiment. This is especially meaningful cryptid for me for two reasons. First and foremost, my younger brother lives in Pensacola, very, very close to the most famous account of this creature. Secondly, is because sea monsters are my hubby's kryptonite. The mystery of what lives in the deepest waters on Earth fascinates me, but frightens him. Sea monster stories to him are what demon child stories are to me. Nightmare fuel. His Pensacola sea serpent is my black-eyed children. What can I say? We all have something that shakes us up, and for him, this is it. Scary stories that center around children twist something that should be sweet and innocent into something horrifying, and to me, that's terrifying. Something I'd naturally want to protect is something I would need protection from. For my husband, it is the thought of an unknown and unseen Lovecraftian eldritch monster right under his feet. Obviously, he's not the only one, or the Call of Cthulhu wouldn't be such a terrifying story. I guess what I'm trying to say is that I get where his fear comes from, even if I don't personally share it. To me, the ocean has always been such a natural source of beauty and adventure that it outweighs any of its negative traits. In this segment, we'll hear the stories of a few people that would probably take my husband's perspective on this subject, though. Let's start at the very beginning. I hear it's a good place to start. In the summer of 1864, Major H.P. Ritzes recalled how on Ship Island, he and other Union soldiers saw what they called 8 monster fish swim into the harbor that summer. He and his crew managed to put 8 harpoons into one of the creatures, but it dragged them 10 miles out to sea before the creature died. When it was brought back to the wharf, the creature was measured and was 18 feet long, 15 feet wide, and 1,800 pounds. That's a big boy. The meat was said to be greasy and unfit to eat, that it tasted like rancid cod liver oil, which sounds pretty terrible. But they took a photo of it, and the picture remains at the Smithsonian. The fish, however, remains unidentified to this day. Also near the entrance to the Mississippi, a Captain Hare found a similar creature in 1889. He called it the most hideous creature the human eye had ever rested upon. Rude. Again, I think these monsters are hiding from us because we're just rude to them all. The men approached the creature in a small boat, which sounds like a terrible idea. They fired upon it and fought it with axes, hatchets, and harpoons. It crushed their ship, but they managed to take off its head, complete with massive, sharp tusks. This more serpent-like creature was also never identified, but it was said to be 40 to 50 feet of it that was visible underwater. It was dark brownish-black with a yellow belly like the fish from earlier, but it was impossible to say how long it was overall. 7 years later, a boat was trolling a mullet on a shark hook off Carabel, Florida. People panicked when something very, very large grabbed the mullet. The crew killed the sea serpent, describing it as an eel-shaped creature over 42 feet long. It had a shark-like mouth with several teeth set at a 45-degree angle. This creature was also dark brownish-green with a yellow belly, but was also never identified. Well, we need to get on this. On November 23, 1901, Henry Nelligan was sailing a naval vessel near the entrance of the Mississippi to the Gulf. He reported to the Navy that his ship passed by a sea serpent about 100 feet long with humps like a camel, which makes this the only official military report of such a serpent in the Gulf of Mexico. But the most famous tale of a sea serpent in this area comes from March 24, 1962. 16-year-old Brian McCleary and 4 friends were raring for adventure and fun. Together, they visited Fort Pickens in Pensacola, Florida, and after viewing the wreckage of the USS Massachusetts about 2 miles offshore from the fort's peak, they set out from Pickens on a raft to go skin diving in the wreckage. While the official story was that the boys lost control of the raft and 4 of them drowned, this was not the story that Brian told the rescue team when he was found exhausted on the beach the next morning. Upon his rescue, Brian told the police that he and his friends had been on the raft just over the wreck when a heavy fog rolled in. They heard a loud hissing sound and the weather started getting stormy, so they tethered their raft to a buoy near the wreck of the Massachusetts when they saw a creature with a long neck standing 12 feet out of the water like an electric pole, topped by a turtle-like head and a mouth full of sharp teeth. It was brownish green with long teeth and green eyes. In a panic, the boys fled to shore, swimming with all their might. Over the 2-mile distance, Brian said that one by one, his friends were wrenched violently below the water, never to surface, their screams silenced by the seawater. When his last remaining friend slowly sank due to some cramping, Brian grabbed a hold of him and tried to pull him along to shore, only to have him ripped out of his grasp by the powerful creature. Brian fainted from exhaustion and trauma, only to wake up on the shore with help on the way. Only one of the 4 boys' bodies was found. The youngest was only 14 years old. Brian McClearly lived the rest of his life traumatized by this event, but maintained every detail of the story to a T until the time of his death. Some theorize that the sea monster is the result of an Apache curse paid upon the city of Pensacola for turning their warrior Geronimo into a tourist attraction. His remains were rumored to be desecrated by this and the skull used by the famous Skull and Bones fraternity in Yale, and his descendants say that he will never be able to rest until his remains are restored. Yet, sightings of the creature predate the Apache warrior whose grave was plundered in Oklahoma, not Pensacola, despite being held in Pensacola. In 2013, a similar creature was spotted near Sanibel Island. The ocean is like a dangerous predator. You can live in harmony with it, but always remember to respect it, and never take its mercy for granted. There are many accounts of things we simply do not understand within the deepest waters. In one way, this is the way I prefer it. The world needs a few mysteries. The unanswered questions give us something to marvel at. There's a certain magic in that, which is part of why I tend to be drawn to stories of the unexplained as much as I am to fairy tales. To me, they're linked by the excitement that comes from believing that there is still a little spark of imagination left in the world. But what do you think? Do you believe in sea monsters or monsters of any kind? Do you prefer the tingle of adventure that comes from the thrill of a mystery, or are you partial to the safety and security of knowing everything you can about the world around you? Neither of these views are wrong, but I'm curious about where you all stand, and I can't wait to hear from you. Thank you for tuning in. I've had so much fun exploring these stories, and I cannot wait to talk about the next one with you. Have a wonderful weekend.